The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, World AIDS Day 2025. Ever since it was first established in 1988, World AIDS Day is observed annually on December 1st. This year, a side event was held December 1st at UN headquarters in New York to commemorate World AIDS Day. Sponsored by UNAIDS and the missions of Brazil and the Netherlands, this event highlighted the impact of disruptions on the AIDS response, showcased the resilience of countries and communities, and called for global solidarity to end AIDS. Let's hear some of the presenters. First, here's Dr. Cesar Nunez, Director of the New York Office of UNAIDS.
We are grateful to the missions of Brazil and the Netherlands in their respective capacities as the chair and the vice chair of the UNAIDS Program Coordinating Board for co-hosting this event together with us. Brazil is going to be hosting our board meeting in Brasilia in a few days, and then we'll be handing over the chairmanship of the board to the Kingdom of the Netherlands, who will lead us next year. So it's going to be a lot of excitement coming through 2026, if I can say it like that. Three messages coming from the report. But first of all, HIV epidemic is not over. In our previous progress, it is at risk. So we're still recorded 1.3 million new infections in 2024. But we are also looking at what has been the reduction of the financial support to the response. And that reduction has not only been aimed at HIV, it has impacted the whole global health. OECD is projecting that external health aid is going to drop by 30 to 40% in 2025 compared to 2023. This is definitely going to cause immediate and severe disruption to health services in low and middle-income countries. My second message on the report is that the recent declines in donor HIV assistance devastated the HIV prevention and the community services, potentially leading to increases in new HIV infection. So in terms of treatment, there has been a flatlining of treatment made available to people who need it. And that is, in the prevention area, it's hitting young people and key populations in particular. So a few numbers that our office prepared. We recorded 31% decline in the number of people receiving pre-exposure prophylaxis in Uganda. This is from December 24 to September 25. A 21% decline in Vietnam from the same period. And a 64% decline from December to August in Burundi. Again, access to proven HIV prevention tools such as male condoms is declining in some countries. Cuts in international HIV assistance are having especially ruinous consequences for community-led services. We have been pushing for the past few years on the importance of community leading the delivery of services and the monitoring of some of the actions that were to be taken forward by member states, but their resources have almost evaporated. And the last element that the report brings up is that, of course, we cannot just, you know, talk about the negatives. There needs to be some silver lining here, and that has to do with some important signs of country and community resilience in the midst of global solidarity that will be essential. Countries have taken swift action to close funding gaps. Will all the gap be able to be filled? No, it will not. So it will require some prioritization. And the prioritization is not a cookie cutter approach. Every country will have to do its own and decide how much goes into prevention, how much goes into treatment, how much into social services, and so on. And that is an exercise that needs to happen now. Regional leadership will be important. We are already looking in this year, African leaders in the African Union roadmap to 2030 and beyond, they pledged to ensure diversified and sustainable financing for HIV and other health programs. Additionally, communities of people living with HIV affected or at risk are rallying all over the world to support each other in their response. And we are pleased to have heard the news about the $11.3 billion raised by the Global Fund last week in its replenishment exercise. Will it be enough? No, it will not. But again, we go back to prioritization. We're looking forward to the adoption of the new Global AIDS strategy in Brasilia during our board, and that new strategy will guide the development of a new political declaration in 2026 with new targets and commitments that member states would adopt looking forward to 2030-2031.
That was Dr. Cesar Nunez, director of the New York Office of UNAIDS, speaking December 1st at an event commemorating World AIDS Day. Now, let's hear His Excellency Ambassador Sergio Franca Denese, permanent representative of Brazil to the UN.
On World AIDS Day, Brazil is honored to once again join this celebration and share its perspective on such a critical issue as HIV and AIDS. This year is particularly significant for us. In 2025, Brazil assumed the presidency of the Program Coordinating Board, the PCB, of UNAIDS at a time of major financial and programmatic challenges for the global HIV response. A time also of setbacks related to human rights protection, especially women's rights. As the current president of the PCB, we reaffirm our historical commitment to the fight against HIV by hosting the 57th session of the board in Brasilia, as said, from 16th to 18th December, at a crucial moment for the adoption of the next Global AIDS Strategy 2026-2031. Over recent months, the board has addressed key issues such as the new Global AIDS Strategy for 2026-2031 and the organization's funding crisis. As chair of this multi-stakeholder body, Brazil reaffirms UNAIDS' vital role in achieving the goal of ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. Mr. Chair, Brazil has indeed a long-standing history in fighting HIV. The year of 2026 marks the 40th anniversary of the HIV-AIDS response in Brazil, which we celebrate with an exhibition that integrates physical and digital installations and includes reference to UNAIDS' 25th anniversary in Brazil. In 1996, we set up one of the first programs to provide free and universal access to antiretroviral therapy, drastically reducing transmission and transforming HIV into a manageable condition. Brazil has shown that a developing country can deliver essential treatments equitably and efficiently on a continental scale through global health engagement and in alliance with civil society. In 2023, Brazil proudly reduced the HIV mother-to-child transmission rate below 2%. The HIV incidence rate in children was less than 0.5 cases per 1,000 live birth. The AIDS mortality rate in Brazil was 3.9 deaths per 100,000 inhabitants in 2023, the lowest since 2013. In addition, in 2023 and 2024, Brazil recorded more than 95% coverage of at least one prenatal consultation, HIV testing in pregnant women during prenatal care, and treatment of pregnant women living with HIV and/or AIDS. Brazil has also played a decisive role in advocating for equitable access to medicines and advancing historic agreements such as the Doha Declaration on TRIPS and Public Health, and the creation of UNITAID, dedicated to expanding access to medical innovations. We helped build a global governance framework rooted in solidarity and focused on people living with HIV and those in vulnerable situations. Yet, challenges remain. Inequalities, stigma, discrimination, and structural barriers persist. These must be addressed if we are to sustain and accelerate progress. Today, we face another pivotal moment, similar to the early 1990s, when antiretroviral therapy revolutionized treatment. We now have the opportunity to control the epidemic with a breakthrough drug, lenacapavir. Nonetheless, the high cost of the drug prevents its adoption within Brazil's Unified Health System, our SUS. Gilead, the US-based manufacturer and patent holder, has signed licensing agreements with a few producers, but these are restricted to 120 low-income countries, excluding middle-income countries where most new infections occur. Unitaid is working to accelerate the introduction of generic lenacapavir at the lowest possible price. In 2025, it announced a $22 million investment in partnership with Fiocruz, a leading Brazilian public health institution, to promote equitable access to lenacapavir and other innovative technologies. Achieving SDG 3.3 depends on making new HIV treatment technologies accessible to all. In Brazil and globally, factors such as income, education, gender, race, and place of birth profoundly affect health and life expectancy. As we know, social injustice kills on a grand scale, and this applies to HIV and AIDS. While reaffirming our commitment to sexual and reproductive rights, we emphasize the need for an intersectional approach in public health policies, one that addresses gender, race, ethnicity, and other identity markers, recognizing how overlapping forms of discrimination shape health outcomes. Brazil's guidelines for addressing HIV/AIDS and other STIs for women in vulnerable situations reflect this approach, and we urge all countries to adopt similar measures. Finally, the new pandemic agreement, together with the Global Coalition for Local and Regional Production, launched during Brazil's G20 presidency, represents a potential breakthrough against AIDS and other epidemic and sanitary crises. These initiatives can help us prepare for future health crises by tackling inequalities and addressing social determinants. Mr. Chair, and I am about to finish, Brazil remains a committed partner in the global fight to end AIDS. In the 2021 Political Declaration on HIV and AIDS, member states agreed to convene a high-level meeting on HIV and AIDS in 2026 to review progress. Brazil stands ready to actively engage in this process and reiterates its full commitment to implementing the 2021 Declaration. As Executive Director Winnie Byanyima reminded us during the launch of UNAIDS latest report, we need sustained investment in communities, prevention, innovation, and the protection of human rights as the pathway to ending AIDS. To achieve this, we must reaffirm our commitment to global solidarity and multilateralism while strengthening international assistance, capacity building, technology transfer, and ensuring equitable access to medicines and therapies for all who need them in developing countries. Thank you.
That was His Excellency Ambassador Sergio Francatenesi, Permanent Representative of Brazil to the UN, speaking December 1st at an event commemorating World AIDS Day. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Staying with that event commemorating World AIDS Day, which was December 1st, let's hear now from Jesus Ahuay, President of Aid for AIDS.
It is incredibly meaningful to be speaking here today at this World AIDS event with such an appropriate theme: overcoming disruption, transforming the AIDS response. This moment holds special significance, not only because of the solemnity of this commemoration, but also because 1988 marked the establishment of World AIDS Day, and for me personally, the beginning of my deep lifelong commitment to the cause. Over the past 37 years, we have witnessed the profound impact of the global activism movement, which has achieved so much in terms of treatment, prevention, and advocacy for people living with HIV. Yet, we stand at a precarious moment. Despite our decades of progress, the fight is far from over. Today, an estimated 4.8 million people worldwide are living with HIV. Here are some stark realities we must face. Globally, an estimated 3,500 new infections occur every single day. Approximately 5.3 million people worldwide are currently living with HIV and do not know their status. Millions remain unaware that they are among the 9.2 million people who currently lack access to life-saving antiretroviral therapy. This is the crisis we face right now. We have also seen how political ideologies and belief have threatened our fight for the basic human right to life. In 1996, I, along with my fellow AIDS activists, founded Aid for AIDS International. It's the only NGO founded and run by Latino immigrants in New York City with a global impact. We have secured HIV treatment for over 55,000 people living with HIV in 75 low and middle income countries, as well among migrants in wealthy European countries. Our collaborative effort in partnership with civil society and UNAIDS have led to incredible results. One of the most impactful achievements of our collaboration occurred in 2018 when civil society organizations, pharmaceutical companies, and UNAIDS secured free HIV treatment for 35,000 people in Venezuela who lack access. This exemplifies the importance of coordinated response. Today, we cannot remain silent as ideological attacks once again put years of progress at risk and place millions of lives in jeopardy. While the goal to end AIDS by 2030 is just unrealistic, we must fight to stop the spread of HIV today. By sustaining funding for the AIDS response, we protect the progress we have made and ensure that the most vulnerable communities remain safe. Expanding access to pre-exposure prophylaxis beyond pregnant and lactating women empowers all at-risk populations, including transgender women and adolescent girls, to take control of their health. Inclusive prevention strategy strengthens our ability to maintain hard-won gains and prevent resurgence in the face of the largest forced migration in Western Hemisphere. Proactive measures to address sexual violence and exploitation can reduce vulnerability and keep HIV infection from rising. Together, we can turn the risk into resilience and build a future free from HIV. We must resist these setbacks and continue to organize to ensure that no one at risk of living with HIV is left behind. Sustained funding and collective actions are the only things that will prevent the spread of HIV from spiraling out of control. We must ensure that our most vulnerable brothers and sisters do not lose their life or access to proper HIV care during this time of global uncertainty and funding scarcity. Let us remember that today is not only a day to pay tribute to those who lost their lives to AIDS-related illnesses, but also a day to renew our commitment to fighting social stigma, to take action, to ensure funding, and to remember that this fight continues until HIV is no longer a threat to anyone. Let us be absolutely clear. A cut to global aid funding is a death sentence. We're not talking about items on a spreadsheet. We're talking about life-saving antiretroviral drugs, essential testing, and critical prevention tools that stop the spread of the virus. This funding is different is the difference between survival and tragedy. And who pays for the highest price when funding stops? It is the community who are systematically marginalized and targeted. We must secure sustained funding to ensure survival for women and girls in high prevalence settings where structural inequality makes them uniquely vulnerable. We must secure sustainable funding for transgender community who face horrific barriers to access basic health care. We must secure sustained funding for sex workers, for people who inject drugs, and for gay men and other men who have sex with men, who are too often criminalized and left behind by the traditional health system. These are the people who are not just at risk, but are the heart of the global response. They are depending on us. The demand is simple, and it should not be negotiable. We must demand full, sustained, and predictable funding for the global AIDS response. We will not retreat. We will not allow a single life to be lost because of political cowardness. We will not stop until we meet the goal and restore the path to an AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. Demand it, fight for it, and let's finish the job. Thank you.
That was Jesus Ajuay, president of Aid for AIDS, speaking December 1st at an event commemorating World AIDS Day. Finally, here's Karen Dunaway, global program officer at the International Community of Women Living with HIV and an NGO delegate to the UNAIDS Program Coordinating Board.
Women living with HIV continue to face institutional violence that has not been addressed with enough seriousness or enough resources. We keep seeing reports of confidentiality breaches, negligence in care, and gaps in sexual and reproductive health services. One of our recent multi-regional studies showed that women living with HIV have experienced at least one form of violence in their lifetime. And in places like my country, Honduras, women still face extra barriers, such as long travel, lost income, unpredictable access to basic care like pap smear, contraceptions, and even in 2025, still dealing with coercion and forced sterilization. And these realities become even harder when essential programs stop. This year, many organizations and networks mapped the impact of the funding freeze and the dissolution of international aid programs. In Latin America, for example, more than half of prevention services, gender-based violence programs, and stigma reduction work came to a halt. We also mapped how these interruptions affected women and young women. And many pregnant and recently postpartum women reported serious challenges in accessing infant formula and maternal care. I shared again today, as I have several I have done in several PCP meetings before, that the HIV response cannot remain stable without cooperation, international cooperation that understands the deep inequalities within our countries. The middle income label does not reflect the everyday realities women face or many people in with HIV face. Many, many organizations have carried a response for decades that has been forced to pause or shut down their work, and very, very few have found any replacement funding. And these organizations have been the backbone of prevention, of testing, of psychological support, of human rights work. And losing them means losing the foundation the community built through years of efforts, and many gains will be lost. We are already seeing the consequences. The World AIDS report reported new infections and increases in AIDS-related death among women. But one of the things, just as Cesar said at the beginning, is we did not only spend our time describing the challenges that everyone already knows, and everyone knows how harder they have become. But we also spoke about where we want to go and what gives us hope. And I highlighted just how important young women are and young people are in shaping the path. Young people are feeling this moment very closely, and many, many are ready to bring new ideas, new energies, new form of leadership, even when there are still spaces that are shaped by adults and find little room for young voices. The reports shows just how young women working in community responses have lost their job, have their hours reduced, and face difficult working conditions. And many have lived through cycles of violence and reproductive coercion that should never be part of anyone's life. And even with all of that, young women keep showing up and remain engaged. As a young woman openly living with HIV, I know how deeply the decisions made in this space shape our lives. And that is why we are here. That's why we are taking up the spaces and helping reshape it so that generations coming after us has more room to lead and more room to grow. I also want to add in this conversation the importance of generational handover and mentoring. I was born with HIV and I started this work when I was 8 years old. So, and I just turned 30. So basically I have grown up inside this response. I learned from people who have been in the movement much longer than I had and who took the time to guide me, answering my questions and reminded me that my voice mattered even when I was a child. And that kind of support opens doors for new generations to step in. And myself, I am also trying to mentor other young leaders. And without it, movement becomes smaller and more fragile, and we cannot accept that in this crisis and the situation that the response is right now. And young people can carry the response into the next chapter with mentorship, with trust and inclusion. To close, we have a very challenging BCP ahead of us in Brazil in 2 weeks. And I know the moment feels heavy, but communities have carried this response through every shift, through every crisis, and every period of uncertainty. And that strength have not gone anywhere. In fact, it has increased. And I keep saying, remember that in the 90s, HIV did not win, and it was because of communities. And we are still here. We're still resilient, and we will continue to guide and keep that advocacy going.
That was Karen Dunaway, Global Program Officer at the International Community of Women Living with HIV and an NGO delegate to the UNAIDS Program Coordinating Board, speaking December 1st at an event commemorating World AIDS Day. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support public media and local community radio. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.